Haere mai, thanks for linking back in with the Daring Poppy channel, all you lovely listeners. Today is the 7th of April 2021 and we're up to episode 3 of season 2. And I'd just like to say I'm going to have a bit of fun playing with this season, and my messages, I'm going to feel like I'm actually on the bridge of my own starship, and that's to do with the HRMS Zealandia, and I'll go more into detail about that from in a future podcast. But just rounding off a little bit with yesterday's, or the day before yesterday's, episode 2, which I ended up naming The Shame of Thrones, playing on the word sham for obvious reasons, and just tidy up there. The other soap opera that Australia has had is a long-running soap opera. I don't even know if it's still going, but anyway, it was Home and Away, along with Neighbours, so that just tidied that little loose end up. And extra links that I put in with episode 2. I always like to give a shout out to all these lovely other digital knights and maidens and wonderful editorial that I draw from. So a special rest in peace little love bubble out to David Bowie as well. I just have watched that Black Star video again and followed it on by watching Heroes, which was beautiful, one of his older pieces of music. So it felt really nice to just really get a feel for the man and everything that he stood for. So a real hero in his own right. Now, off Enter the Stars Reloaded, I put a link in there from something that had come to my attention last year again, and it's called The Silent Pandemic, Small Intestine Bacterial Overgrowth, Attack of the Archons. That's very much worth going and having a look at, people. I'll let that speak for itself at the moment. I added in off the Voices for Freedom, a lovely group of New Zealand women who are leading the way to do with the coronavirus madness in this country, and that's a little video called Mask Mandate Madness, which has a little bit more to do with our little people and what they're being subjected to in schools and early childhood centres around the world while this mask mandate is playing its agenda out. I also put a link in of Ms. Magazine, about Ms. Magazine. I've posted about that in the past, but this is going to keep coming up because this is about second wave feminism, which is nothing short of a Trojan horse that got wheeled in to divide and conquer the family unit. And just have a nice little close look at the picture. That's the full editorial, sort of what they love to display. I'd be very ashamed of that if I was a feminist, particularly what's in the womb of that mother that's displayed in that particular article. Focus in on that little bubba that's in the womb of that woman and the position it's in. I think it speaks 1,000 words as well. And the link off HuffPost, Pat Robertson dispels the creationist idea that Earth is 6,000 years old. That's an extra one I popped in off some editorial off Computer Hope. Very interesting, the computer history for the year of 1999. A lot of activity went on that year leading up to Y2K, so that's a very eye-opener what was going on behind the scenes that year with digital skullduggery, as I call it. And an extra one there from Mr. MBB333, Under the Earth Weather Space Weather Links. Something seems to have changed. this never used to be there. And that's just from earlier in April this year, but it makes a he's referring to something that occurred in New Zealand that was similar, an anomaly. And I went back and had a look on the Lady Mary Hall's YouTube channel, which was the one he was using as an example in his recent clip. And back in the archives, she was showing that something very strange happened in Queenstown to do with the sun earlier this year. So if you're interested, go and let your fingers do the walking and have a look at that yourself. And an extra one from Masert Duk, the gentleman who put together the end time movies. He has also on his channel got a very interesting clip called Gulf of Aden, Mysterious Vortex, Ancient Eye of Ra Has Been Awakened, 2012. So I've inserted that because this is all to do with the Suez Canal and where all these merchant ships are navigating at the moment. So this is all going to tie in together in a way that at the moment it's just a wait and see game, but that's a massive piece of the puzzle as far as I'm concerned. Alrighty, so moving on to today, please be encouraged to grab pen and paper and start just jotting down maybe a few dates and times and places and cross-reference to your own personal life experience. That's what's going to really help everyone to get a feel for this and personalize these messages. I'm using my own life as an example at the moment because that's what's prepared me, and preparedness is everything. We can only act on our own conscious convictions here in this moment, and it's going to really be important that everyone's equipped with their own personal convictions as we navigate forward. So I'm going to call this episode Daylight Snobbery, and that will reveal itself. I'm playing on the phrase daylight robbery, and I'll talk about that at the end of this podcast when I include what links are going in. But talking about, you know, just keeping on this whole working model, the bridge, okay? We've all got our own place where we have our database of information. We've got our bookshelves full of books, hopefully. We've got our computer database. We've got our circle of friends. So this is all culminating into our working model is really our game plan that we have working with those that we hopefully are sharing the journey with. And any great generals that are formulating plans of attack know that it's all about positional warfare. Of course, most important, know thy enemy. But what's the mission about? Well, I did mention in episode one way back on the 22nd of April last year when I launched this platform that it winded up being a rescue mission. That's multifold, but essentially the most vulnerable are the ones that we're rescuing. So when you're on a rescue mission, you've got to have a lot more bases covered. And organization is just absolutely paramount. So you've got to have the highest level of intel that you can. You've got to know the terrain that you're navigating. You've got to know weather conditions. It's about positional warfare. You've got to know the position of who you're dealing with and what angles that they might be coming at you with, or what smoke and mirrors that they've got set up to try and confuse the issue. And then the the environmental stability. So if there's, you know, you're moving into wetland territory, you've got to have the right gear. You've got to, you know, if it's a rugged jungle, you might be encountering landmines, all sorts. If you're on the ocean, there can be those depth charges that have a habit of sneaking up on you unexpectedly. And satellite surveillance. I'm just playing here with, you know, being creative with what we've really got to throw as a challenge out to ourselves in the way of preparedness. So these are all the things that I'm going to keep presenting that, and to me, my way of thinking, what I've learned over the years, I'm just piecing together, really, even up until I've prepared this podcast, so much more has really made sense. So one of the key things is have people around you that you know that you can trust. And that's a big call, because when you're a first responder, you've got to know, the 101 is that other people have got your back, and that's all about trust, and who else is prepared to put their lives on the line. So we're all there for each other, and a lot of people will take a bullet for other people. You know, there's all aspects to this, but that's the key. And that's a model in itself, because that's about a role model. And as human beings, that's the greatest role we can play, is being a role model. And that's, you know, this comes back to the self-worth, being the best that you can be, lead by example, walk your talk, no double speak, let your word be your honour, and your honour be your word. And then people know where they stand with you, and that in itself means that there's no warfare, because if we don't know where we stand with people, then we're in dangerous territory there. It's so important at the moment to actually unite and know that we're all pulling in the same direction and we can all lean on each other. So just sort of framing that up, I'd just like to come back to a little bit of my personal testimony. Being born in 1963, I was at the end of the wave of the baby boomer generation, because that ended in 1964. So I was actually born into an era of what I call modern domestic warfare. And that's because there'd been, since 1946, a modus operandi to erode moral decency and really divide women. And that's why I say that's when the thinning of the blood began, because women have always gathered and shared, and the domestic arts have been a place of where you'd come together and bottle fruit and weave and create together and talk about the things that were meaningful in life. And unfortunately, one of the things that I see crept in with modern woman was a gossiping kind of circles, rather than these the moral fibre of our foremothers, and what was the glue really that kept them strong. So that moral fibre. So the time that I was born into was also a turning of what I call the sexual tide of identity, of actually just really strong ladylike behaviour. We transitioned into very loose sexual standards by the time I hit my teenage years, which was 1976 to 1982. Now, I'm mentioning these dates because it's all going to, I'm going to liken this back to what was actually happening with the feminist movement in America. You know, it's one thing for me to be growing up as a Kiwi down here in the Southern Hemisphere and in the land of the long white cloud, but we found out that there was some creeping crud that was infiltrating us from the Northern Hemisphere, and they knew they had to move very quickly on our country because, as I've mentioned, we're a nation of very astute and very powerful women, as I see it. So what happened was, when I grew up and the black and white TV was rolled out, things that impressed upon me were the whole alien invasion came in with TV shows, you know, like the Men from Mars and Lost in Space, and then the 2001 Space Odyssey movie by 1969 that was unleashed. I'm pretty sure it was 1969, Stanley Kubrick. And I'm not going to talk too much about all that space side of it, because believe me, that was predictive programming for me as a child that seriously seeded fear into me about anything to do with space. I had an older brother who just feasted on it. He loved it, and I don't blame him for that. It was fascinating, but it was a psyop, and there's absolutely no disputing that. Anyway, the brainwashing forces to do with entertainment were really well and truly amping up through cultural influences and social engineering and glamorization in a pop culture way, is the way I see it. So this began with the Happy Days. That really cool, nothing wrong with it. I loved Happy Days, but that was an American sitcom series that ran from 1974 to 1984. And that was sort of seeding this pop culture where, you know, you've got the drive-in movies and the fast food, and, you know, you go and hang out and socialize and fast cars. And but it's also a time of sort of revealing that women were sort of becoming more sexually active before marriage. And I'm not totally against, you know, that you have to be married for any of that, but it was just that the looser standards were starting to be seeded, and that crossed over into my school environment. That's what I'm just going to portray here. So staying on that subject, Saturday Night Fever was released in 1977. And I loved it all, you know, who wouldn't? But, you know, the dance drama film, John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John, beautiful. But, you know, it was all about getting in the back seat of the car and getting another notch on the belt, and just another normalizing of maybe activity that wasn't really, shouldn't have been encouraged to the degree it was, because even though it seemed harmless back then, it was the beginning of what was to come. So that's the point I'm making. Now, Charlie's Angels was another one I'll just pluck out of the archives. That ran from 1976 to 1981. That ran for 5 seasons. You know, this was all really steering us towards idolizing and just worshipping this whole industry and the Farrah Fawcett Majors with the beautiful teeth and the blonde hair and this really unattainable, but for most people, but very, and I call it entrapment, because it led on to what we now have today. And we're all finding out what the casting couch was all about in Hollywood. So, you know, getting rich and famous and going to Hollywood was the last thing anyone really wanted to do when we're finding out what's actually been happening with Harvey Weinstein and the like. And I'll just actually pop in there too something that I discovered today, which I think's relative, Barbie dolls. And they were released by Mattel in America, launched on the 9th of March 1959. So that's sort of leaping back a little bit in time, but that was an American businesswoman by the name of Ruth Handler, if you please. So that was 1959, and then they released the Ken doll a couple of years later in 1961 on the 11th of March, and they were created by another woman, Angel Sophia. I found that quite fascinating. So these were fictional characters introduced by Mattel. And Ken, as I say, he was a counterpart to Barbie, and they met on the set of a TV commercial. That would have been very romantic. But anyway, I'm just going to round that all together there to give people a little bit of a feel for how impressionable young people are, especially at adolescence. And we were being sold all this pop culture, this Americanization of the American dream. And anyway, it's got a lot to answer for. Let's just leave it at that. So for me, by the mid-70s, that's when I left school and hit the workforce. I was a school dropout, as I mentioned in my, what episode was that? Oh, Memoirs of a Tall Poppy, when I gave a little bit of background to encourage people about how what you can achieve against all the odds without an education. So that's me. So into the workforce I dove in the mid-70s, and chauvinism was alive and well, but in a pretty light-hearted way in New Zealand. We had a bit of humour mixed in with chauvinism. You know, chauvinism being an attitude of superiority in itself towards members of the opposite sex, behavioural attitudes. But, excuse me, one of the things I found most confusing was sexual innuendos. And that's very confronting as a woman, because you never know what's meant by a sexual innuendo, because it can either be a genuine advance, it could be someone just having a bit of fun, or they could actually be making fun of you. And I actually took it as the third way. I was very self-conscious and unconfident, and I certainly didn't for 1 minute think that there was going to be any advancement on that. And I guess that was my saving grace, because I was quick to retreat and make sure I wasn't a target. But that served me well, because I learned to navigate with precision out there in the big wide world, and I'll just leave it at that. excuse me. So rolling on, I was fortunate enough to have invested in my own home by the mid-80s, and that was just that led up to, by the end of the 80s, I was ready to OE, head off overseas, and that was with someone who ended up, we travelled together and ended up being the father of my children. So what I'm pointing out is that we had some lovely security. It was a ultimate way to sort of leave your homeland and know that you had some security when you got back. And anyway, we were only away for a couple of years. We based ourselves in England and did a little bit of tripping into Europe. But what I'd just like to focus in on today is what shocked me, which is to do with the whole way that women were starting to behave. The class distinction in England utterly shocked me, and I didn't enjoy it one little bit. I felt like a fish out of water over there. And it was the snobbery, the social climbing, and this air of superiority. It was foreign to me, and I didn't warm to it. But I'm just going to say it was a real taste of what really does go on around the world, and probably it's just, you know, England it's just intrinsic over there because they've had it for so long with the royal family and the aristocracy and just us and them and all the rest of it. So that was a big takeaway for me. So I fell pregnant with our eldest son while we were over there and knew that that was it. We were coming back to raise our children. A lovely little interjection we had before we came back to New Zealand was we did a pilgrimage up to Scotland because I really wanted to get to Scotland because I've got such strong Celtic heritage, Irish as well, but we didn't have time or money to get to Ireland, I'm sorry to say. So Scotland was it, and we needed to get to the Isle of Skye because both my partner and I are of the Clan Donald lineage, and the Donald Castle is on the Isle of Skye, and we needed to take a vehicular ferry to get there. There is a causeway there now that's been built since. So that was very nostalgic, being able to get to Scotland and to the Donald Castle there. And then we returned home by the end of 89, and as I say, our son was born in 1990. And anyway, back to New Zealand and our good old Kiwiana way of life to raise our family. Since becoming a full-time mother, my life and experiences and powers of observation have afforded me a really acute examination of our world at large. That's all I can say. And I can now tie all this together in one neat, tidy, kind of as best I can, little package and compare apples with apples, as they say. So with that knowing, I now realise that when I was born, that was the beginning of what they call second wave feminism. And that was when the women's liberation movement was birthing in America. And if we're going to compare apples with apples, so we're going to sort of have a look at this on the spectrum, would say that the women's liberation movement, the second wave feminism, was what I see undid the exponential work of our foremothers. And that was by design. The second wave feminist movement began sort of officially in 1971 and then really started amping up in 1976. So I'm just going to pause there, folks. I'm going to need to join two together here, but it's not going to be as long as yesterday's one, which was a bit of a whopper malopper, as I call them, but very necessary. So bear with me, folks. I'll be back with you shortly. Okay, so moving on. You know, when we talk about know thy enemy, we've got to realise that women ended up being their own worst enemy and an utter disservice to fellow women, children and men included with this so-called liberation movement. And as I said earlier, it was a Trojan horse And if people have taken the time to have a look at the link that went in yesterday, episode 2, to do with Margaret Sanger and this eugenics movement, you realise that this is when the war on the unborn child began. And it wasn't just protecting children anymore, this was protecting the unborn child. So this malevolent movement went to a whole nother kind of approach of really spiritual warfare, is the way I see it. So it was, you know, it was all in the guise of giving women, you know, my body, my right, and all of this, but no right for those unborn children. And this has led on to what the medical establishment knew that they were going to unleash to do with ultrasound scanning that came years later, that became available when I was pregnant, and I said no to ultrasound scanning, primarily because it hadn't been proven safe. The attitudes at that time were, well, it hasn't been proven unsafe, and that's just not good enough. But that was literally what the medical establishment were defending it by, saying, well, it hasn't been proven unsafe. So we were literally guinea pigs for this new form of technology, invasive technology. They now have 3D scanning that they're unrolling. I know a lot of women think it's wonderful and, you know, it's cute to be able to see what's growing in your belly, but it's very, very invasive, and it is a health hazard. So we start to see also what ultrasound scanning has offered women, and this goes back to, you know, a good right back through the last 30 years. It's been offering women a choice to actually terminate a pregnancy if there's an abnormality found, and particularly to do with Down syndrome babies. And I've got a big problem with that, because I'm going to put a link in today to do with just human rights, to do with what's the way that even back through the 50s and 60s, there was just terrible treatment and institutionalization of anyone that, or any child that wasn't considered socially acceptable. And it was very easy. That happened in New Zealand. There was a lot of choices that families were offered prior to the ultrasounding, that if you did end up having a child that was compromised in any way, I mean, they used the word retarded back then, you could just sweep them under the carpet and not have them around you, and off they went. And there was dreadful treatment and just very, very inhumane practices that went on in a lot of these institutes. So I'd just like to say that this is why this all weaves in together. We've had women leading the charge on this normalising of abnormality. And what's so sad is that up and coming generations that have grown up with this moral degradation, your conscience just wanes, and you don't end up really having very refined attitudes about being a humanitarian. And it's that intergenerational moral deterioration about our responsibilities and ultimately our ethics, that's where I'm going to wind up today. Because why I became very disillusioned over the last 4 months and felt that I didn't really actually want to speak for a while was that saying, all that's necessary for evil to prevail is for good people to do nothing. And my shock was that people that I know that should know better, that I considered good people, this whole coronavirus and confusion of principles has been a real sifting out of who's really made of what, and what it's defined as, that birds of a feather flock together, and good just doesn't cut it anymore to be a good person. We've actually got to add something else in there, and I personally have done some soul searching about that, and we need to add in there that it's a good people who have got a strong conscience is what's going to cut it. And what's a conscience? Well, I've just gone to dictionary.com. It's a naming word, and it sort of connects in with the inner sense of what is right or wrong in one's conduct or motives, impelling one toward right action. Okay, so the complex of ethical and moral principles that controls or inhibits the actions or thoughts of an individual, and an inhibiting sense of what is prudent. So I think that's quite fair, but I like the way that the word prudent is there, because that's one of the four cardinal virtues. And we've talked about that in previous podcasts. The four cardinal virtues are justice, prudence, temperance, and fortitude. So there we go. We've got one of those cardinal virtues coming through there. And I'll put a link in for that today for people to be able to help meditate on, if you like. So conscience means ultimately to know together, and that's this new model. We all need to know together what needs to be known. We need to be pulling in the same direction and really strengthening up on these functioning principles. Okay, so I'm gonna just go through today's list. I hope you've enjoyed that. And as I say, go and create your own mind out there and get a feel for how it's saying time-wise, your own life's experiences, and get a few of these facts weaving in and comparing notes, and just see how that sits with you. So on the topic, we've just back in 1993, this is sort of 3 years into motherhood when I'd made the decisions I had on the vaccination issue, I joined in New Zealand we had a society called the IAS, the Immunisation Awareness Society, and that was led by a beautiful woman called Hilary Butler. And I'll put a link in today from back in 1999 to do with vaccines and the immune system and vaccines and breast milk. And Hillary's beautiful medical examination of the historical medical research on how vaccines affect the immune system. And why that really helped and supported me being part of the Immunisation Awareness Society back then. Not only for education, I was really wising up to what else was happening in the world through that. And something I never forgot was that Japan was a really great testimony globally to a country that had a conscience, because they weren't really that big on vaccination, but they did accept the MMR vaccine, which was so controversial back then. It was a triple jab, mumps, measles and rubella. And by 1993, that triple jab had been banned in Japan because they had the moral conscience to actually to have a register for adverse reactions, and we failed to do that in New Zealand. Being a small country, we would have been a great pilot country to have gathered information, but our adverse reaction agency was totally dysfunctional, and doctors back then were not taking mothers seriously who were saying that they believed their child had had a reaction, and it was really up to the doctor whether that was going to be taken further. So a lot of women's confidence got sort of ripped out from under them through doctors sort of overriding what women were saying about their own experiences with their children. But that was a standout. Just wrote these notes down. The triple jab was banned in Japan in 1993 after 1.8 million children had been given two types of MMR and a record number developed non-viral meningitis and other adverse reactions. So I'll be putting that link in today. That's off the Australian Daily. Where is that? Bear with me. That's off the Australian Daily News. Okay, so Daily Mail Australia. I'm going to also include off the Global Down Syndrome Foundation, History of Down Syndrome, Human and Civil Rights Timeline. The dictionary.com for the definition of conscience. I'll be placing in there off history.com the Woman's History of Feminism. The Ms. Magazine site on YouTube, their images of all the covers of their magazines. That's a display in its own right. Off a lady called Princess Jen on YouTube back in 2010. There's a short clip there. I have posted this previously in an earlier episode, but I'm going to repost it. This is an interview of Alex Jones interviewing Alan Russo, and that's to do with the fact that the Rockefeller funded the Women's Liberation Movement. And Alan Russo talks about the liberation movement was all about taxing the other half of the population and breaking the family up. Also, just a funny little one that I'll be putting in there to do with calling this daylight snobbery. The phrases.org.uk, this is very worth going and having a look at. What's the meaning of the phrase daylight robbery? I'm not going to say any more about that because I might in the next episode have a bit of a giggle about that because that's just so relevant to everything we're talking about here. But I don't want to make this podcast too much longer. And on the lovely topic that's one of my passions to do with Earth, Weather, Space, Weather, Morning Dew, just a fish from the 5th of April, lovely Mike up there in, he's in Alberta, Canada. What's going on in Los Angeles? Global moisture increasing? Cyclone Seroja. And at the end of that good 15-minute clip. He is showing that Earth's weather patterns are it's unprecedented. There's no jet streams where jet streams used to be. There's huge vortex energy at the North and South Pole that have never been witnessed before. And there's just this mighty value that's just swamping the equator. So that's a really big takeaway at the moment. And the whole new approach to weather, and that's what makes the whole climate change so laughable. I mean, the Northern Hemisphere is under ice. Russia is just like unbelievable what's happening in Russia at the moment. There's a whiteout along with a number of other countries. I mean, Saudi Arabia has had snowfall. All these regions that shouldn't be having hail and sleet and ice are getting them. So that's why it makes this agenda on controlling what we think about weather laughable, because the handlers that run this planet, originally called the approaching weather catastrophe, global warming, and you can see why they quickly needed to change it to climate change, because warming wouldn't actually fit the bill at the moment for this freeze over that's happening in the Northern Hemisphere. And the piece of music that I'd like to attach today is from back in 1991. It's Crosby, Stills and Nash off their Daylight Again album, and it's To the Last Whale. And it's off a lovely YouTuber called, I hope you pronounce the name right, Nero Augusto, and there's a little bit more of the name there, but it's long-winded anyway. I won't make a meal of that, but go and enjoy that, folks. A lot of people didn't even know of that song, but To the Last Whale, I mean, what a salute. I just sit and weep every time I watch that, and it sort of rounds in amazingly with why whales have the ability to do that. My shadow and that's and things that we can actually really manage. So here we go. Okay. It's been a joy to be back with everyone. I'm kind of surprising myself that I've got the energy to keep turning this out at the moment, because I am much more exhausted and I'm really honest, I'm a bit of a lone wolf at the moment. In a bit of a standalone position, and never thought I would be finding myself after all these years not very supported, but that's where it is, and just got to keep navigating and taking one day at a time. That's my motto at the moment. So it's lovely to share with everyone, and hope it's a divine inspiration, because that's where it's coming from for me. And share, and pick up the love, and keep faith, and we'll get there in one piece, folks. I'm ever excited about what I know is coming. I'm just hanging in there, as I say, at the moment, and I'm just really proud to be able to pull these off while I'm at it. Okay. Wish you all well. This is a cool coffee. I'm off to now.